1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until three today. Tracy Vance, good afternoon to you.
Hi there.
Yeah, Tracy, you were following that story that was all over the media last week about the family of wild boar that were loose around North Kerry.
Yes, that's right. I was. I felt the story was everywhere, although many people I've spoken to seem to be unaware of it. And that was one of the reasons why I was hoping that your show would pick it up and talk about it this week.
You were concerned about how it was reported and how this was handled.
Yes, I was concerned about what happened, and I'd like to know more, really. I'm not a wildlife expert by any means. I'm just a person who was really saddened and incensed to see these boars killed, summarily executed, really, is what they were. I mean, in some of the reports, it was described that they were euthanized, but that's not what euthanasia is. Euthanasia is termination of a life to end suffering. It's meant to be an act of compassion, and those boars were not suffering. There was a lot of footage of them on social media. You could see that actually they looked very friendly and very tame, and so I can't imagine the situation in which it was decided so quickly to kill them.
Now, I know, you know, reading the reports around this, that there were fears or concerns raised about the possibility that they may be carrying diseases and that this might infect the national herd.
Well, do you mean the national herd of cattle? Is that what?
Or no, of the thought? Pigs, as I understand
pigs.
It. Yeah.
Okay, well, my understanding is that a large majority of the pigs that are raised in Ireland are raised in factory farms. They're in enclosures. So unless the boars had the keys to the enclosures, I don't see how they were really a risk to the pigs. And my concern is, why wasn't that investigated more? And if there, why couldn't they have been quarantined? Why couldn't there be an investigation in that? Why is our first thought to just kill anything? Why do we have to take that approach? What was the Parks and Wildlife Service doing?
Yeah, well, we did ask. The Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage have responsibility for this area, we understand. Mm-hmm. And we have asked them for a statement, and we're hoping, hopefully, before the end of today's programme, we will hear back from them for, you know, how exactly they approach this. But your issue really is that there didn't seem to be any discussion around what to do here, that they went straight to
exactly,
killing them.
Exactly, yeah. And it just seems to me to be symptomatic of the attitude that we have here towards nature and wildlife. I mean, we all know, we hear it all the time, we are in a biodiversity crisis. You know, our rivers, our lakes are more and more polluted. We have almost no pristine waterways now. You know, it's just every day there's something in the news about the loss of wildlife, the loss of our natural world, and here we come with some wildlife, and what do we do? It was a family. It was a family of boars. If you look at that footage, it is actually heartbreaking to think. And then there was one, of course, who was left, who got away, a large-ish male, I think. And then the news that came soon after that was that he had been killed too. Well, I mean, of course, his family is gone, so what life is there for him? But really, like, what are we thinking? What are we doing here?
Were they wild, though, in the understanding we would all have, or were they a group of pigs that had kind of broken out from, had been, you know, farmed to some degree and had gotten away?
That's a good question, and I haven't seen an answer to that, but that's a very good question. And if they were a group that had broken away, why wasn't there some effort made to find where they came from, who were their owners, who had raised them?
Okay, Tracy, will you stay with us? I want to bring in John Paul O'Connor. John Paul, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Katie.
Now, people might know you from your sausages.
That's right, yeah, sausages and black pudding and white pudding. But just before I go any further, I had a crisis of conscience there about 6 months ago, and I changed the whole aspect of my business. I'm gone completely vegan.
Oh.
Yes, yeah, because this thing was touching my heart a bit, and I was feeling I had a crisis of conscience about it. And
you had a crisis of conscience about killing pigs to make
pigs
sausages?
Exactly. It was playing in my mind for a while, and I decided to go the other way. So, to me, it makes a lot of sense, like, and I completely agree with that, the lady, the previous caller.
Tracy.
There, like, yeah, Katie, yeah, somebody had a... Tracy, somebody had a crisis, had a rush of blood to the head, and made a very rash decision, like, and should have thought a little bit more about it. To me, seeing it from my point of view, is that I think these were semi-domesticated animals, and why kill them? You know, why you know what I mean? This is absolutely abhorrent. Like, it's outrageous.
I didn't realise, John Paul, that you make vegan sausages now. I didn't realise that was your... It's Sosta is your brand, isn't it?
Sosta is my brand, yeah. But I'm still continuing on the Sosta brand, but it's all my products are vegan. We're working on it at the moment. I completely closed all my operation from using blood and using meat.
And as you say, are you still a meat eater yourself?
No. I gave up meat 6 months ago and I'm completely vegan. So I think this should be a lesson for people as well. Like, if I can turn my business around from using meat to using plant-based food, I think anybody can do it. You know what I mean? And I think that's the road a lot of people should be examining their conscience, like, and putting a lot more thought into it. I mean, I could have continued on, like, and probably had a very good business, but I changed my mind.
What changed your mind, though? Did you have a moment that turned you from meat to this vegan road?
I did. I'll tell you, Katie, when I was doing it, I demonstrated all over the country, like in all different in different shops and supermarkets and all that. Like, and the amount of people that was coming up to me and saying to me, you know, that are vegan, and a lot of people got quite insulted, like that I was putting my product forward, you know what I mean, as killing an animal and stopping a hat and all that, like, and I think about it at night time, you know what I mean, and the more people that came up to me, the more I thought about it, like, and the more I thought it made sense, like, you know what I mean. So I could have been greedy and went the greedy way about it, but no, I said after a while I made a decision to go vegan.
You could say, though, that going vegan in terms of your business is a smart business decision at the moment, because it's certainly on the rise, you know, people's approach to this and people moving on to veganism.
Well, not really. I mean, I was thinking about this for a while, like, you know what I mean, and people have to reflect on what they do, and, you know what I mean, after all, these are they have heartbeats and whatever, and I think, you know, I thought long and hard about it, and it would have been a lot easier for me to continue on as the way I was, you know, and to instead of changing over to vegan. So,
and come here, do you miss meat at all?
I don't, to be honest with you. No. I'm actually sitting inside my garden now at the moment, and I'm picking kale and lettuce and kohlrabi and beetroot and all that, and I'll be making a salad later on. So I don't, to be honest with you, I don't.
Right, because I'd say a lot of people say, even when they move away from meat, or they become vegetarian or vegan, that it's the smell of a rasher or a sausage that they find hardest to resist.
Sometimes, sometimes, but like everything else, since this COVID, I didn't have a drink for the last year and a half, and to my amazement, I don't even miss that, and I get 50 years drinking.
Well, you're a very clean living man now, so John Paul, I come here. Going back to
our... A lot of people don't recognise me lately. They say, what the hell has happened to you? And I think just before we go there, I think there's a rumour, well, it's only a rumour around Killoglan, that Peter Kane has captured this boar. And you know, Peter Kane that trains the Kerry team, and I believe he's going to feed some of the Kerry team with this wild boar. Will we have any chance of beating the Dubs this year? So,
right, okay. Going back to the boar, though, you think that forget it, but you know, moving on from you've decided to go vegan in your business, but
yes.
In terms of how they were approached, that you say that, you know, should they have been maybe used for meat, if somehow brought into somebody's farm?
Well, of course, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, brought into somebody's farm or something like they have in Cork, or into a zoo or something. You know what I mean? After all, they're feeding crocodiles in the zoos with meat and whatever, and you know, they should have been used in some other way. You know, but killing them off like that, like me, is doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense. Okay, will you stay with us, John Paul? I want to bring in Shane McAuliffe. Shane, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Shane, I saw the photographs that we're all looking at online. Mm-hmm. You took one of those, one of the photograph of the family of boars.
I would have seen the boars myself last Tuesday, and I would have seen the remaining boar on Friday morning. Yeah.
And you are a pig farmer yourself, a big pig farmer down in Castle Island, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
So can you tell us any more about the thinking behind this and why they had to be dispatched in this summary manner?
Well, I suppose, firstly, wild boar are an invasive species in Ireland. And you had your caller there talking about wildlife. But, you know, they actually aren't wildlife because they are a threat to native flora and fauna. And they do serious damage to, you know, native species, agricultural crops, farmland, and they're vectors for exotic diseases that not only infect pigs, but infect other livestock. And that is why that when there's any sighting that's reported to the authorities, it's followed up on. And, of course, this is the same with every other invasive species in Ireland. It's not just wild boar. You know, many other animals are culled each year because they are a threat to our biodiversity here in Ireland.
Are they wild though? Do we know where they came from? Or did anyone try and investigate that?
Well, you see, in here in Ireland, boars are all their DNA is on a national database, and that was done because it allows the Irish Farmers Association to go and check if pork products in retailers or butchers, etc., are Irish. So if these boar were at any point even legal and legally owned, then their DNA would be on a database, and then it can be traced up who the person was who illegally introduced them into the wild. But in the general area, no, there wouldn't, you know, it's not known that there's someone who had wild boar.
So, excuse me, Katie.
Yeah, Tracy.
Were those boars checked? Was that DNA database checked for those boars?
It's currently being done, yes.
So they were shot first, and then you're checking their DNA after. Is that what you're saying?
But they're wild animals, so how would you expect a wild animal who's also an invasive species to
They don't look very wild. I mean, you took a picture of them yourself, but they don't look very wild. They look very tame and friendly, actually. They were wagging their tails as they approached whoever was taking the video. And they are wildlife. You described them at the beginning as not wildlife, but they absolutely are. Every species of animal that exists on this earth is falls under the umbrella of wildlife, and it is not really up to us to decide who gets to live and who gets to die.
Well,
that's called speciesism, and
that's incorrect.
It created our downfall, that attitude.
Okay, Shane, respond there.
Yeah, I would suggest that caller looks at Biodiversity Ireland's website and reads about the damage that invasive species do to our environment. And also a very important note as well, that the wild boar were roaming around an area which is very ecologically sensitive. It's a special protection area for the hen harrier, and we know that there's no nests in the area.
Yeah.
So those nests would have been destroyed, and that would have caused a devastating impact on the number of chicks that would have been fledged this year. And in particular, the farms in which the animals were roaming in, those farmers are in the hen harrier project. So they're
those boars could not have been rounded up, quarantined, had their DNA checked, investigated who might possibly have been their owners. None of that could have been done. Why couldn't that have been done?
Because they're an invasive species. So you're not going to be taking an invasive species and putting them in quarantine. It's the same with all the other animals that are invasive species.
Who decided that they are an invasive species? Who gave them that label?
That's the legislation. That's the Department of Heritage who look after that, who look after the NPWS.
Would you explain to us, Shane? Sorry, Tracy.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, but this is just so much nonsense. National Parks and Wildlife Service then should include that information in the report that we would like to see from them, because I don't think it is appropriate for us to just declare that certain species, the wild boar was original to Ireland. There are countries all across continental Europe that have wild boar populations that live quite happily there and provide eco-services. And
they're culled as well.
Sorry?
They're culled as well. All numbers are controlled. Denmark, for example, have removed all their wild boar in the last 18 months because of the devastation that they were causing.
Well, there were seven on that road, I think. I'm not sure that represents enough for a cull, but I just think that it was far too hasty what was done.
Well, the law was adhered to.
Shane,
maybe the law needs to change.
Well, Shane, can I ask you, what diseases were you concerned about? What would you be what would the department be concerned about that these wild boar might be in danger of introducing into domestic?
Well, as we've seen in Eastern Europe, wild boar have been carrying and spreading African swine fever, and that is a very devastating disease. The wild boar specifically took it into across the German border, and Germany was legally declared as having African swine fever, and overnight their markets collapsed and they lost all their third markets. So that would be a serious threat, but not only to pigs. You know, the animals that I was looking at were roaming in between cattle, so they could have carried the likes of brucellosis, lepto, pathogenic E. coli, salmonella, many other diseases they could have been carrying, and they could have spread to other animals in the farmland.
But I suppose, Tracy's... Well, let me bring on... Sorry, we've got other callers who want to come in and they might have some view on this. Can I bring in Lucy Glendenning? Lucy, good afternoon.
Hi, Casey. How are you?
You heard there. I mean, you know, it's a very, very serious matter for pig farmers if this was to be any of those many long list of diseases were to be introduced into their herds.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. This first of all, I mean, as Tracy I think was saying there, I mean, seven animals which weren't even checked to see whether they were diseased. It seems extraordinary to even talk about a cull when you just kill that number. But I think the other thing that we're really missing here, I mean, I think it's kind of ironic that a pig farmer is talking about biodiversity and protecting the environment when we know the amount of damage that is done by these enormous intensive farms. 99% of pigs that are farmed, if we could call it farmed, factory reared in this country, are reared in sheds. They're very sociable animals. You can see it there in that family. They... under normal circumstances in these sheds, they don't get, they're inside all the time. They have very stressful lives. And we know that stress leads hugely to disease. There have been so many outbreaks of diseases within factory farmed animals. I mean, I can't remember, the entire herd of China was culled a few years ago. Denmark has an enormous pig industry. Sorry, excuse me now, Shane, you've spoken. Denmark has an absolutely enormous pig industry where we are rearing and pigs by disgusting figures. They're fattened in a short space of time. Mothers are still kept in farrowing trays. They still cut their tails off. The teeth are ground down. I mean, what we are doing to animals, to these particular animals, I mean, those pigs you saw were happy. They were quite tame, as was pointed out, particularly from the videos. What we are having in factories are so prone to getting disease and illness. And to think that we would kill a family of seven animals to protect, in inverted commas, animals that are reared in their millions to purely for slaughter in really stressful conditions. And then you look at the environmental issues as well, the slurry, and all the rest of it that goes with all of this. I mean, we really need to turn this on its head. And I really applaud that amazing farmer who's turned vegan and has decided to go into producing vegan sausages and bacon. Because
are you vegan, Lucy?
Yeah, I went that way about 3 years ago. My youngest son, who was 16, convinced me. I mean, I went vegetarian when my eldest, actually, who's now 23, was about 11. He said to me, why do we eat animals? And I said, because, you know, it was habit and culture. And he said, well, can we stop? And I said, yeah, sure, we can. And I did. I didn't go the whole hog, so to speak. But in about 3 years ago, I started investing more in the dairy industry and cows and all the rest of it and the calves and live exports. And I just thought, you know what? He's right. And he's 17 now, and I'm vegan. My husband was ill a few years ago. His vegan diet suited him very, very well. So, yeah, we're basically a family of vegans at the moment. I have two other older children they kind of dip in and out. They're not vegans, but they're really looking more at what they eat and how the animals, what kind of lives and deaths these animals have, and the quantities. It's the industrialization of of it. That's the problem. We need to support small farmers who are able to look after animals,
okay,
where animals can live their lives, a worth life worth living.
Okay.
And we need to stop this stuff, you know. And then going and killing 7 animals just to try and protect an industry is crazy.
Okay, Lucy, Shane, I'll let you back in a moment. I just want to bring one other caller in. I know, Shane, you'll want to respond to what Lucy was saying there, but I just want to bring in Dr. Karen Moore. Karen, you're a doctor in ecology.
Yes.
So where do you stand on this then?
Well, I can say just the conversation has grown, of course, from these 7 individual boars that were shot to huge questions and a wide range of topics. But where I would stand on the actual issue that I emailed in about is that the shoot first and ask questions later, or don't even ask any questions, that seems to have happened is what I take issue with. I understand the ecological damage that can be done by even species that were once native to an area being reintroduced, and that's down to the human impact on our world landscape, where you have the need for management of pretty much everything now because of the way humans have impacted on the world landscape. So I understand that there may have been, you know, this phrase biodiversity threat posited around by the NPWS in
But do you not accept that, though, Dr. Moore? That this is a sensitive ecological area. It's a special area of preservation for the hen harrier.
Well, I think the question comes down to the individual animals. They themselves pose no biodiversity threat to be corralled, taken. There's animal sanctuaries. There's even private people who would have been very willing to give these boar a good home, as one of your callers just pointed out there, to give them a life worth living. These were not wild animals in terms of being able to sufficiently possibly look after themselves. They had definitely been released. You can see their actions on video footage of them before they were shot. They are almost like pets, almost tame. And their biodiversity threat would be negligible.
Okay.
So I think it's a little bit alarmist to say that they were going to definitely, as another caller mentioned there, definitely destroy hen harrier nests. There's no definite about that. And in fact, a lot of our domestic pets would pose a threat to many more wildlife species of birds than these particular 7 boar. So we need to possibly look at the tens of thousands of domestic cats we have in our country and if we're so worried about biodiversity threats.
Okay, will you stay with us? I want to let Shane respond because there was a lot thrown at you there, Shane McAuliffe. But just in relation to that last point, that why was there this rush to shoot first and ask questions later?
Because that's the legislation. That is how invasive species were handled. And I'm sure if you speak to an ecologist from the likes of the NPWS or the Department of Heritage, they'll explain exactly why that this is done. They're culling thousands of other animals every year. The deers in Phoenix Park are culled, as down here in Killarney, it's the same thing.
It's a different thing, though, that, because I think a lot of people understand the necessity of culling, you know, in relation to, say, the deer herd down there around the national park. But this is different. This is, as I say, just 7 animals, and I think anyone who saw them, they're beautiful looking, you know, the lovely creatures. You were there with them. Did they seem tame to you when you were up close and personal with them?
Well, what you have to remember is that they're wild animals, and wild animals are always unpredictable. And even on my farms, when we're moving, you know, larger sows and boars, we always have to be very careful and use stock boards in case anything happens. And in fact, one of them actually was quite aggressive. So, you know, it took me by surprise because I was watching him closely. And then at one point he made a turn and was going, making a run. You know, wild animals are unpredictable, and you know they are invasive species, and that was how that it was dealt with last week. Everything, all the legislation was adhered to.
And again, I just hitting on the word wild, because all our other callers, you know, from what they could see on the social media footage, seem to think that these are pretty tame, you know, that they were domesticated in some shape or form. They weren't born in the wild and they weren't feral.
And that's why they'd be more of a risk, because they'd be familiar with humans, and it would be even more unpredictable about how they would react.
Dr. Karen Moore.
Yes, hello. A farmed pig is a wild animal, Shane.
They're not farmed pigs. And they're
perhaps
feral
you have
pigs.
To use those boards because they're scared out of their wits when you're moving them around, and are confused because they've been shut up in the dark their whole lives.
No, that's not true at all. That is not true. All my farms are modern, high welfare farms, and they're not kept in the dark. That's such nonsense. And I might, you know,
you
go back to...
You think they could be stressed when you're trying to move them around, and that's why you need to
certainly not
support?
Stressed. As a pig farmer, my goal is to raise pigs for pork consumption. Okay?
How come you're now a spokesperson for MPWS and Department of Agriculture?
Hold on now a second, right? I raise pigs as a living on my farms. If they're mistreated in any way, if they're stressed... They don't grow and they get sick. It is not in my interest to mistreat animals in any way, because it affects their health and their welfare, and then affects their growth rates, their average daily gain. So it's bizarre.
Excuse me there. Well, there's medication that you can use to mask those stressful conditions, Shane.
I don't use any antibiotics on my farms. We raise pork antibiotic-free. The only veterinary administration they get would be vaccines, so that they're kept healthy.
Exactly, because the way you keep animals in close contact with each other, they are prone to disease and disease spreading. If we look at zoonotic diseases that are
true.
Passing...
If they were outside...
What about swine flu?
Well, hold on a second. You want pigs outside, do you?
Yes, in the press where they should be.
Well, then, let's take a look at that. If pigs were outside, there would be soil-borne diseases. There would be pathogens that travel by wind. There would be the risk of predators. There would be hypothermia. There would be heat stress. There would be all these other things that affect the health and welfare of outdoor pigs. However, on my farms, they are controlled units where the temperature is kept at the optimal temperature for them, that they're comfortable at all times. There's no stress from the wind, from the
rain.
They
must be filling in some amazing surveys to give you this feedback that they're not stressed.
Well, they're certainly not stressed, because as many people know, I have many open farm days where people visit my farms. We are quite open on social media, online. Loads of videos of our farms are available to see. And it's clear that they're not stressed in any way.
Can I ask you, Shane, do you get, you know, because we spoke there to Lucy, who talked about her journey from vegetarianism to veganism. And also we had John Paul earlier having this, you know, major change of business and personal habits 6 months ago. Did you feel that the tide is turning against, you know, meat producers like yourself?
Well, if we look at the facts, pork and bacon consumption is increasing year on year in Ireland. The latest 4BS figures show that in lockdown, more people were eating pork, more people were cooking pork. Very healthy, high in vitamin B1, high in vitamin B6, high in iron, in zinc, a source of protein and amino acids. It's a very healthy, versatile meat. And year on year, Irish pig meat exports are growing. Last year, we hit, I think it was the 1 billion euro mark. Our pig meat is going all around the world in huge demand in China. China have now overtaken England as the number one market for Irish pig meat, because Chinese consumers understand that quality assured pig meat is very, very safe to eat from a food safety point of view, but it's also reared to the highest possible standards.
Same as the infant formula, I guess.
I'm not a dairy farmer, so I can't comment on
infant formula. The Chinese are lapping that up as well.
But the number one attribute to Chinese consumers, it's well documented, is food safety. And that's why they're choosing Ireland, because we're a major agri-exporting nation with very high standards in terms of animal health, animal welfare and sustainability.
Lucy, do you accept that there is that Shane, as he describes it there, is a very responsible producer of pork, you know, for a market that exists and is entirely legal, entirely ethical?
No, I don't. No, because, I mean, you know, he says that the animals are protected from the wind and the rain. I mean, to actually even try to convince yourself that you're protecting an animal that would live very happily rooting around in the earth and the soil. They love to swim. They can actually swim underwater. I've seen footage of pigs actually taking freshwater mussels from the bottom of the rivers. And to sort of try to convince us that these animals have been fattened up in quite a short space of time amongst, you know, thousands and thousands of other animals are happy and content because they're not in the wind and the rain. I mean, you know, we can convince ourselves of all kinds of things, but I think people aren't really that stupid to actually believe that a pig that would normally live outside is suddenly happy to be living in. Why do we cut their tails off? Because they bite them. Why do we grind their teeth down? You know, why do we do these things? Why do we have to give them antibiotics, as Karen pointed out? Because they get sick.
But Shane pointed out that he doesn't give his pigs antibiotics, Lucy.
Well, no,
but
I think he agreed that he did. He has to give them antibiotics if they get sick. I mean, hold on. We all know. And pigs are actually the highest. I think they have more antibiotics than any other farmed animal. Alice Broff is a very good person to have a look at. She's a vet, an English vet. She worked in the industry for 4 years, and there's a fantastic YouTube speech by her. She's seen it all, and she visited farms. She looked after, you know, animals when she was called out, and so she's seen the farms. She knows what they're like. We can kid ourselves into thinking that these pigs being battened up for sausages and bacon are all happy as Larry, but you know, they're not.
I might just come in there.
Yeah, Shane.
Because you said that I'm trying to convince you, but I'm not trying to convince you because you're not a consumer of pork. And that's why we as farmers have an open door policy to actual consumers. So if people want to learn about my farm, they contact me online, they come and visit, whatever, and they learn about it for themselves. But you've said you don't consume pork.
The thing is people actually don't. No, no. And most videos,
Shane, are available online on YouTube. Yeah. We've been on RTE TV numerous times.
I'm sure they are, Shane. But in all fairness, most people go to the supermarket, they pick up a packet of rashers or they go to the pub and they ask for a ham and cheese sandwich. They do not ask where that ham came from. They do not ask where the rashers came from. They don't. Most people have their heads in the sand because they have no idea of the cruelty that is involved and the numbers involved in killing these animals every single day of the week.
That is why we as farmers are always telling people to ask about the provenance of their pork. The IFA have worked hard at this for many, many years. That's why the DNA traceback scheme is in place and how we can find out if people are using quality assured pork or not. And the IFA have recently joined with AgriWare for a public media campaign about Irish family farms. It's called Sustaining Ireland. And AgriWare, in fact, do quite a lot of work at bridging that gap between farmers and the public. And in schools,
with the pigs, the great thing is in the PSG, in the Programme for Government, there is hopefully a big move to start rearing pigs outdoors where they can actually live a life worth living. Yes, it's in the Programme for Government.
No, they're investigating it. Investigating it.
Investigating it, hopefully with a view to going in that direction. But again, we're going back to talking about...
Yeah, I was just going to... Can I bring us back, Lucy, to interrupt you there? To go back, because we have got a statement in from the National Parks and Wildlife Service. This is part of the Department of Housing, Local Government and Heritage. It's a very long statement. It's three pages long, but I'll just give you a couple of points and really reiterating a lot of what Shane McAuliffe there has been saying to us. They're saying that it is currently an offence under the European and National Nature Conservation Legislation to introduce without a current license certain species into the wild, which may have serious implications for our native flora and fauna. Such releases are not only illegal, but they also pose a very serious threat to the disease-free status of the national herd. Wild boar are not native to Ireland and are, in fact, an invasive species. The practice of releasing or dispersing boar or feral pigs into the environment is illegal and a totally irresponsible action. They say wild boar are a potential reservoir for diseases such as African swine fever, foot and mouth disease. They're saying that the pig industry is a very valuable industry, supporting a total of 8,000 jobs, and that these actions put these jobs in jeopardy. National Parks and Wildlife are indebted to the concerned landowner for reporting the sighting as soon as they did. I'm just trying to get a sense of... They say that they acted in line with their own legislation. There is no evidence to suggest that the boar was infected with African swine fever, but it will be tested to confirm this. And I'll bring you more from that statement if I can see as I go through it here. But as I say, it is 3 pages long. I want to bring in Farah. Farah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
You're Italian, Farah.
That's right.
And you would be more familiar with boars than we would be.
Well, I tell you, for us, the wild boar is considered like rats because of the disease they bring, for a start, and also it's an invasive species. And unfortunately, Tuscany is absolutely plagued by them. And every single town in Tuscany, at a certain time of the year, they do this fair where they kill, hunt the boar because they can have a terrible effect on the vines. They destroy vines after vines. Now, vines are extremely precious, industry-wise, and therefore they destroy everything they can find, vegetables, anything that grows on the ground.
So,
farmer or no farmer. And the guy that they just, I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, the gentleman there,
Shame.
Is absolutely right, because it is not only an invasive species, but also they carry a lot of various disease.
Right.
Which they spread very quickly. Now, I'm talking about not just yesterday, the day before, since 1400, they have these fairs in Tuscany and around the area to control them because they multiply very fast. You know, and that's what they call almost rats. And the lady that say they wag the tail and they're lovely and tamed, she doesn't know. Wait until she's charged by one of those. The damage can do to the human body is unbelievable. They are like mini bulls. They have their little horns at the front.
Mm-hmm.
And they're tattooed by that like the bulls. They're tattooed with the horn.
Mm-hmm.
And the damage to the human body is not funny. Wagging tail is probably take away the mosquitoes or something from the, you know, like the cows, they wag their tail, but that doesn't mean they're happy or they love to see you.
Okay, stay with us, please, all of you, because I need to take a break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And we've been talking about the manner in which the family of seven wild boar were dispatched, shall we say, summarily, last week. Pat Warner, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
You are formerly of the National Parks and Wildlife Service.
That is correct. And I live in North Roscommon. And what I wanted to say, really, was this is not the thing that happened in Kerry. It's not the first time, it's not even the second or third time that somebody has released a litter of hybrid crosses between an ancient pig breed called the Tamworth and wild boar, which they obviously breed up. And then when they've got a litter, they go and release it. One of the releases was literally in my parish here, and the animals were so tame, they went into people's houses and farmyards. They were all shot, and I got to see one of them, and I know what I saw. It was not a pure wild boar, but it was a wild boar cross.
And so why are they bred, Pat? Why are they being bred?
Never actually able to trace it, because obviously it's an offence to release them, and if we'd been able to locate the culprit, we would have be able to prosecute them and stop them doing it. We the NPWS, I was, I'm retired now. But there is somebody who is doing this as a matter of policy, almost certainly because they want to create a population of wild type boar for hunting purposes. And they've tried it in a number of places around the country.
Really? You believe that there is an actual... there's somebody out there, and we won't name any names or make any suggestions of who this might be, but that there is somebody who wants to populate the countryside with an animal to hunt.
Exactly. And it's not the first time it's happened. It's been going on for at least 10 years. And it's not the only animal. Some deer species have been released. There's a population of muntjac deer, which are Chinese, I think, have been released and naturalized themselves in Wicklow. Roe deer have been released in Fermanagh and Sligo. So there are, you know, there are several people around who see it as their mission in life to improve the range of huntable species in the country by releasing various species.
Wow. And in terms of what happened in Kerry last week then, like a lot of people very upset that it was, as it was put earlier, shoot first, ask questions later in relation to that group of boar.
Well, that's a bit unfair because, as I just said, this has been going on for 10 years and the people concerned were not acting off the cuff. They were acting on the basis of an institutional memory of a problem which has been thought about and talked about going back over 10 years. It had never happened in Kerry, as far as I'm aware. This is the first time in Kerry. But it certainly happened in the northwest of the country when I was the divisional manager there.
Yeah. And let me ask Shane, when you came across these boar, was that the sense that there somebody out there was trying to release them to later hunt them?
Well, I've been, you know, reading and writing about wild boar with many years and going to international conferences and learning about the devastating destruction they cause. So for me on Tuesday morning to get a message from someone locally with, you know, with a photo of wild boar to say it's 2 miles from my house, it was very, very surreal. But it is well established and well known that there are sightings from time to time. There, I know in my time, in my work in pig health with the IFA, I would have had similar reports sent to me, and then the authorities deal with it straight away. But again, we don't know where they come from. But of course, that is the worry that someone is illegally releasing animals, and not just the wild boar, but the Chinese water deer, the muntjacs, and other animals as well, who cause a devastating impact to our native species.
Okay, Jerry Boland. Good afternoon.
Hello, Katie.
Do these boar cause this level of destruction? Do you believe?
I don't know is the answer to that. Certainly several of them don't. Like, I saw the footage like everyone, like all the other people who've been on the programme with you today. I saw the footage. Certainly not these seven. Maybe if you've got thousands of them, the whole Tuscany thing is different because they've had them for so long. What I find interesting about the programme so far, what's happened is that the conversation has swerved from, you know, a small family of wild boar being shot summarily without any questions asked, without anybody asking, you know, would Farm Animal Sanctuary like to take these in? It's gone on to pig farming, where we have a pig farmer talking. And to me, it emphasizes the chasm between people in all over the world, I suppose, the people who respect animals, and I would put myself into that, and I'm sure Shane would put himself into that, but I don't believe that. I think this is a conversation about people who respect animals and people who use animals and exploit them. And, you know, in a pig industry, that's what they are. Pigs are brought into the world for the sole purpose of raising them as quickly as you can, cram them into a shed, get as many of them as you can into a shed, feed them as quickly as you can. Like, these pigs are slaughtered at 5 to 6 months of age. That's how quickly it all happens. So...
Do you believe, Jerry, that anybody who raises animals for meat respects those animals?
Yes, I do. I do, but I think anybody who raises pigs or poultry on a factory farm has a perverse idea of what respect for animals means if they're in that business. I live in a part of North Roscommon, actually, possibly close to where the last man spoke. And I'm surrounded by small farmers who all respect their animals. So I'm not on here talking about whether we should kill animals or not for food. I'm on talking about, well, first of all, I got onto you in relation to the seven wild boar because I was incensed by it. I couldn't understand how such an act could take place without anybody even asking any questions. And if that's the legislation should change. And I might often also maybe remind your listeners, and most of them wouldn't know this, but the Department of Agriculture launched with great hype and hoopla at the beginning of this year their new animal welfare strategy for the next 5 years. And Katie, seriously, you should go and read, it's online, you should read the introduction to the animal welfare strategy because it reads literally like an animal rights charter, talking about the value of animals, talking about their sentience, how much we're learning about animals, how we need to respect them. And yet, if you look at the factory farming industry in Ireland, it's a joke. It's the complete antithesis of the animal welfare strategy of the government. So we have a very perverse relationship with animals in this country. And I'm delighted that this item is getting covered. And I'm actually delighted that it's expanded into the conversation we're having because we talk a really good talk about the highest welfare standards in Ireland in this country. But actually, in practice, they're not high at all because factory farming of pigs is the antithesis of high welfare. And I know Shane McAuliffe will disagree with that.
Okay, well, we'll let Sean agree or disagree in a moment, but I do have to take another break. Stay with us.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Shane McAuliffe, I was saying I'm going to give you a chance to respond to Jerry there and his issue that factory farming is the very opposite of respect for animals.
Well, of course, there's no such thing as factory farming because we don't own factories. We own farms. They're all family-owned farms in Ireland. Large doesn't mean bad. It just means that we have...
Well, I suppose it's another word for intensive farming, though. And Shane, you would be... You're an intensive pig farmer, are you not?
I am an intensive pig farmer, yes. But to say I'm a factory farmer is wrong because it's not a factory. It's a farm. It's a family-run farm. But, you know, Irish pig farmers are very much committed to sustainability, to environmental protection. I mean, if we're looking at my pig farms, for example, they're all heated with air-to-water heat pads. It's all quite sustainable. We don't use any oil for heating. The manure that we use is liquid fertilizer that we use on our own farm, so we don't use any chemical fertilizer. Continually working with nutritionists to reduce the imported feed ingredients. Lots of research going into homegrown proteins at the moment. And so we're very, very proud of what we do. You know, it's a sustainable operation, and Irish pork has the lowest carbon footprint in the European Union.
Jerry.
Can I come in, Casey, for a second?
Yes.
Well, Shane can... we can deal with semantics about factory farming or intensive farming. Like most people understand factory farming as being intensive farming in sheds, essentially. And the reason it's called factory farming is because a lot of farmers actually don't regard intensive farming as farming because the animals are in such huge numbers that it's impossible to treat them as individuals. And this is where the crux of the matter lies. These animals are individuals. And when you're raising 40 or 50,000 broiler chickens in a shed, they cease to become individuals. And when you've got 500 or 1,000 small piglets in a shed crammed up in space when they're 5 months old, they cease to be individuals. So Shane, I'm sure, believes that he's running a good operation and the pigs, you know, they're not dying, like he's making money out of it. But these are sentient animals. They're animals that have needs. They have social needs, behavioural needs. How can they possibly be met in a big, crowded shed? It's just a joke, except it's not a joke for the animals. So, and this is why people are running away from eating meat, Shane. This is why, because people understand, there are a lot of reasons why people are changing their diet, and climate change is obviously a big one. But
didn't Shane just, sorry Jerry to cut across you, but did Shane not explain to us there that the market for pork is actually expanding, not shrinking?
Yeah, but that's why it's regarded as a hidden industry. like factory farming is a hidden industry. Like Shane has made great claims about anyone can come and visit his farm, and I'll take him up on this. I'll email him after the show and I'll ask him, can I come and visit? Because my experience over the years in trying to get to see inside any of these poultry or pig farms is there is no way you can see them. And you'll be given the reason in terms of it'll be to do with them. It'll be due to disease control. But the fact is that these are hidden industries. People don't know.
Shane, will you invite Jerry onto your farm?
I will. And of course, Irish pig farmers are very involved with secondary school teachers. Videos of pig farms are shown to all secondary students, school students who are doing the ag science curriculum. I do a lot of lecturing myself. I lecture in many universities with the MTU here down in Cork and Kerry. I've lectured in Carlow IT, UCD, many, many others. So to say that we're a hidden industry is not true, because if you do look, there's actually plenty of information about us and, you know, where you can find out about sustainable Irish pig production. It's all there.
Well, I'm sorry, Shane, that isn't true, because like you, I don't go to university. Well, I do actually. Before COVID, I was giving regular talks and presentations to secondary schools and colleges in the Northwest on factory farming, on where our food comes from. And I can guarantee to you that about 95% of all the young people that I spoke to had no idea that pigs were spent their whole lives in sheds, and had no idea that chickens spent their whole lives. That is not true to say. People are too busy with their lives, and the industry does not go to any great lengths to show how these animals are bred. It goes to great lengths to hide them. Like, let's face it, you know, it's hard to find a pig farm because they're hidden away in the countryside.
Well, that's your opinion, because, you know, even primary school students, AgriAware, have electives for all primary school students on Irish food production. So there's quite a lot of work being done to educate, or I wouldn't say educate, but engage with consumers about Irish farming practices.
Is there concern?
There's no work being done to try and change the system. Sorry, Kate. There's no work being done to try and change the system. It's a system change that's needed. You can, like, almost all the tails of pigs in all the factory farms in Ireland, pig farms, almost all of them are docked, or in other words, they're cut when they're tiny little babies, when they're 1 or 2 days old. Now, that is actually against EU legislation, but it happens all the time.
Do you do that, Shane?
I do on some of my farms, but of course, tail biting is a very complex issue. There's officially over 80 reasons why pigs bite each other's tails. But I'm glad to say that I was the first farm in the Intact Tails pilot study with the Department of Agriculture, and I was chairman for pig farmers for that program. So doing a lot of work in rearing pigs with Intact Tails.
They bite their tails because they've nothing else to do. They can be aggressive animals. They've nothing else to do. They're deprived of all of their social and behavioural needs. That's why they're biting their tails. They're attacking each other. They've nothing else to do. I ask anybody who's listening to this programme to just Google factory farmed pigs, and you will see hours and hours of footage. Even chuggers, you know, who should be showing the best practices. If you look at any of the chuggers videos on pig farming, all of the pigs have their tails docked. It's unbelievable.
Shane?
Yes, there's nothing illegal about cutting tails. If you have an issue with tail biting, it is allowed under the EU directive. And as I said,
only in exceptional circumstances. I've read the legislation change.
Yes, and there's a lot of work.
Okay, Jerry, can you just let Shane respond, please?
And Jerry, you also mentioned that there's nothing else for them to do. Well, every pig on every farm, according to the Borbia Quality Assurance Scheme, has plenty of enrichment. And enrichment means something that's introduced to pigs so they can carry out their natural behaviour. And my research background is actually, I have a lot of work done in enrichment. I have a master's in pig health from the Royal Veterinary College in London, and a lot of my work was on pig welfare. So I'm carrying out many different research trials all the time on providing different enrichment. So my pigs have plenty to do, and I think most people who follow me on social media, especially Twitter, you know, and they see my videos, they can see that my pigs are quite happy.
I can hear your passion, Shane, and I commend you for it, but what I would say to you is that you're so locked into the industry and you're so bought into what you're doing that you are failing to see. It's like hidden in plain sight. You're failing to see that what you're doing is disrespectful to the animals. It's not respecting the animals.
Can I just put you, Jerry, that you haven't seen Shane's operation yourself at first hand? So
practically all pig units are the same, which is cagey. They might differ in some small ways, but I've seen online thousands of pig units in every country. So Shane's might be a little bit more state of the art, but it's only state of the art because it's the same idea. Like you cram as many pigs into a shed as possible, and you feed them as quickly as possible. You control the environment, and then when they're 5 or 6 months old, off they go to the slaughterhouse, and you get a new batch in. And we haven't even talked about the stressful life of sows. Like, don't get me started on the unbelievably stressful and horrible life that sows live. Pigs that can live maybe for 20 years and they're slaughtered after about 4 or 5 litters, or maybe not even that. Like, this is not a nice industry. I know a lot of people won't like me saying that, but it's not a nice industry. And I'm sorry to say that to you, Shane. It's not a nice industry.
And look, you're entitled to your opinion. That's fine. As I said already, we're very proud of what we do and how we commit. We, contribute to, even if we look at the bigger picture, pig farming contributes to the United Nations sustainability goals. We contribute to the likes of no poverty, zero hunger, good health and well-being, responsible production, climate action. There's quite a lot of work that we do. And again, like I said, we're very, very proud of it. And look, you're entitled to your opinions and you're entitled to your beliefs. But at the end of the day, you're not a consumer of pork. So it's the consumers that we as farmers always want to engage with. You've made your choice. You've made up your mind on what you think of pig farming, and that's fine. It's totally your choice. But for us as farmers, we prefer to work with people who are already consuming pork, and that's why we want to engage with them and tell them about what we do on farm and okay. What practices we have.
Okay, we'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Anne Fox, good afternoon to you.
Oh, good afternoon, Katie.
It's got fairly hot and heavy on the vegan versus meat eater front. Where do you stand on this?
Well, let's say I'm vegetarian for an awful long time, but in more recent years, I would say I'm a plant-based person. I would love to say that I am totally vegan. That would be wonderful if I could say that, but I'm aiming towards it, I have to say. Yes, my way of life would be aiming towards that. And
what stops you from being vegan? Is it dairy or what holds you back?
Well, I wouldn't. Well, I haven't been using any dairy products, eggs or anything like that for quite a number of years. And, I believe it's sort of to do with the reality check. And I was very struck by what John Paul was saying there earlier. Like when he sat down and thought about it, and then he kind of...
This is our sausage maker, John Paul, if listeners didn't hear the first part of the show, had a road to Damascus transformation and decided that he was going... This is sauce to sausages, that he was going to go vegan in his business and in his personal life.
Well, this is it. And you see, I think, like for him, the man was closely involved, shall we say. He had close involvement with the meat industry due to his business. And then he saw the reality. And I do believe one of your former speakers there managed people not knowing and things being hidden, like even the language, for instance, like during the COVID there was a lot of talk about processing. Now, what does processing mean? Meat processing factories, processing. What does it mean? Like even saying factory farming, you could say industrial would be more a realistic term. And so we're kind of masking the reality really by our use of language as well. And I think this is where this should come into schools programs. And I think I do think there is a difference between small farmers and farmers who engage in intensive farming. I don't think there's any comparison really, but you don't hear the differentiation or the difference being highlighted very much. I don't know if they are represented by different bodies. I'm not sure.
I would say that the vast majority of pork produced in this country would be in operations like Shane's.
They would be farming,
pig rearing would for small farmers would be, I would say, fairly niche.
Yes, and that's a pity really, because the whole objective presumably is to provide cheap food. But like cheap food is got a very high price for animals. And even to see, as you will if you go on the internet, you know, if you look at compassionate war farming or in this country, Ethical Farming Ireland or Eyes on Animals or these organisations, you'll see the footage of the actual conditions. And they're usually filmed secretly, the conditions that these animals are being kept in. And to look at sows and their defeated looking faces, it is heartbreaking to look at. And I honestly believe if people were aware of the reality, they would think about just the way John Paul, who was on earlier, he kind of sat back and had, you know, just thought about it and then he thought, well, perhaps this isn't the right way to be going. And I get the impression he's very happy in his lifestyle now. You know, he's not missing anything.
And Anne, do you eat any meat at all now?
No, I certainly haven't eaten for 30 odd years.
And what you said you're you know, heading towards a full plant-based vegan kind of existence.
Well, let's say a plant-based diet, but a vegan existence would mean I wouldn't have leather shoes, which I would have bought, you know, in the past. That much shopping going on in the last year and a half, and that sort of thing. So,
all right. So your diet would be completely plant-based now.
It is indeed. Yes.
And
yes,
do you miss any part of your old diet?
Well, certainly not. I mean, certainly not. In fact, I find the smell of meat quite repulsive, just the very idea. But what I have noticed in recent times is the intensive, to use that word again, marketing of meat. Like even here where I live, there's a hoarding and you're looking at a big piece of red meat or bleeding, you know, the blood coming out of it on a plate, you know, promoting, and I find that repulsive actually, promoting the use of meat. So I would say that the meat industry, like Jane mentioned there earlier, working very hard, but I'd say that the meat industry is also working very hard, promoting the use of meat and dairy as
Anne, I have to say to you, a lot of people like meat and see absolutely nothing wrong with eating it, and you know that.
Yes, I fully agree with that. But really, the thing is that a lot of people really wouldn't be aware of the reality of what happens in the meat industry.
Okay,
it's all. It's not visible, and therefore what you see, like what you don't see, doesn't really bother you. And in the same way as in, you know, I think there may be plans to label a food, we'll say for instance eggs, you know, whether they are barn or a cage or, you know, that sort of thing to allow people to make the choice. But that hasn't really applied to intensive farming products.
Okay,
and meat from intensive farms.
Okay, thank you for that. I want to go to, because we're running up to the hour, and I want to go to Peter. Peter Maguire, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie, how's it going?
You were once chased by a boar.
Yeah, but not in Ireland. Myself and a friend were in Tuscany in 2010, and we walked up this lovely little hill to a nice restaurant we've been recommended, and we may have eaten wild boar that evening. It was on the menu. And when we were leaving, it was almost dark. And we heard kind of a rustling noise and a grunting noise. And what the hell is that? And next thing we realized, we were being chased by a wild boar. It felt a little bit aggressive, for sure. But we were also a little conscious. Like, I didn't know at the time they were an invasive species in Tuscany. We were very conscious that we were kind of on his or her land.
That you were on his menu.
Possibly, yeah. It did feel a little bit scary, for sure. But, I definitely wouldn't like to be chased by one again.
Were you warned about them there? Did you know it was something that could happen?
Not at all. So at the time when it happened, we were like, what is this? Like, what is this thing? And we were like, have we had too many glasses of wine? Didn't know anything about it. And actually, it was only when I was listening to the show there and I tweeted about it that I was like, oh, okay, no, I didn't even know they were an invasive species there. I just assumed they were native. But they were, yeah, that was it.
And how did you get away from them?
We just ran. We ran down the hill. Luckily, it was at the start of our holiday before we'd eaten all the pasta and drank all the wine. So we were a little bit fitter and able to do it. Yeah. And then I think it might have just lost interest in us. But yeah, I definitely, I mean, we could kind of vaguely see the outline of the creature. I definitely wouldn't mean like to be for it to actually have gotten us. It wouldn't have been pleasant. So I don't know. Perhaps they are somewhat of a danger, but also, you know, Ireland is a, you know, there's not a lot of dangerous animals in Ireland. So yeah, I don't know how much of a danger they might be in Ireland. But that was what happened in Tuscany.
Right. Okay, Peter Maguire. Yes, indeed. Many thanks for that. Let me bring in Joe. Joe Minogue. Good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. Yeah, I just wanted to make a few comments there about the wild boar, etc. First of all, I like eating meat. I'm going to continue eating meat in the future. It's very good for you. If you don't actually get certain vitamins and minerals that you can from meat, you'll end up with heart trouble probably. So I'm all for farming and everything else.
Yes.
But anyway, the wild boar is synonymous with Ireland. I said to your researchers that the ancient Celts used to wear the carnix on their helmet when they were going into battle, etc. And the state here should try and reintroduce wild boar, because they've introduced other wild creatures like the white-tailed eagle, the kite, etc.
But we're just after hearing from Philip there that they were chased down a hill in Tuscany by a wild boar. Do we really want to be introducing this into our environment?
I think we should indeed, because, I mean, they're lost to our environment. We all talk about diversity in the human population, and you will accept that with humans, diversity. Why can't we have diversity in the animal population here in the country? Because we had wild boar here from the end of the last ice age, 12,000 years ago, up till about the late 1600s, early 1700s, I think, when they were wiped out, you know.
Yeah.
And all we want to do is destroy everything.
Yeah,
I mean, we have the Green Party in power here, like, in that, and they should be, you know, immediately involved in this kind of thing,
well,
you know, to reintroduce species that have been lost to the state. There is an EU directive there which states that states can reintroduce species that have been lost.
The Germans have reintroduced.
Yes?
Sorry, and I should say Peter, of course, was the man who was chased down the hill by the boar. But isn't that what landed Eamon Ryan, the Green Party leader, in trouble before the last election, when he suggested that perhaps we should be thinking about reintroducing wolves into the Irish landscape?
Well, maybe so. That's another matter. But as regards a wild boar, they're no different, we'll say, to a bull. I mean, the bull during the rutting season in September is a very dangerous animal. But people aren't complaining about those. And bulls are all over the country because they're required for breeding or livestock. And a bull is far more dangerous than any wild boar. There's a lot of poppycock spoken about how dangerous wild boar are and all this. Wild boar are very beneficial for countries. They're widespread all over Europe, especially in Germany. They pick up all kinds of invertebrates on the soil, like, which can carry nasty things. For an example, the water snail can carry liver fluke. It's actually the intermediary for the liver fluke, which gets into cattle and into their livers. They're a flatworm. Now, wild boars would clean up the fields if they were here. And that's just one thing. Also, they bore with their noses. They use their noses to turn over the soil, which aerates the soil and make it far more productive than it is.
Okay. That'd
be really beneficial.
Joe, I'm out of time. I did not expect you to take this turn at the end of this conversation, but we might have you back again. Thanks for that, Joe. We'll take our last break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And that's it for today. Today's programme was produced by Sean O'Gorman. Mark McGrath was on sound and Elaine Conlon was the BCO. Catherine is up next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.